Hello, my name is Tamar Ziff.
And my name is Sanjana Dilal.
And this is Outside the Bubble, your number one news source for everything that happens outside of St. Andrews.
Yes, so last week we dealt with a myriad of stories from the Latin American region, but today we are addressing an area much closer to home, Europe. Specifically, but not restricted to, the European Union.
For some time now, the EU has been roiling due to a debt crisis. Five countries, the pigs for short, have weathered the brunt. Seriously? All right, I'm sorry if you can hear this. There's a car alarm going off outside, but if you can't hear it, that's great. Anyway, the pigs for short have weathered the brunt of the Eurozone debacle. Portugal, Italy, Ireland, Greece, and Spain have undergone economic collapse, running the gamut from bankruptcy, Greece, to a tenuous sustainment due to the receipt of aid. Ireland. Germany, which some would call the economic engine of the EU, along with, to some extent, France, have been funding the majority of these bailouts for their troubled European peers. However, one must ask, how did it all begin? How did we arrive from a stable Europe to one in turmoil?
Yes, well, different national leaders have very distinct viewpoints on the matter. So Wolfgang Schäuble, Germany's finance minister, wrote in September of 2011 that whatever role the markets have played in catalyzing the sovereign debt crisis, it is an undisputable fact that excessive state spending has led to unsustainable levels of debt and deficits that now threaten our economic welfare. Here he was making a not unsubtle jab at the pigs, whose increasing state subsidization and mismanaged state spending have been pointed to as one of the leading causes of the economic instability.
Greece's Minister of Finance, Evangelos Venizelos, provided a counterstatement. We should not be the scapegoat or the easy excuse that will be used by European and international institutions in order to hide their own lack of competence to manage the crisis and give a definitive and complete answer to the attacks against the euro, the world's strongest currency. So far, we have two conflicting theses as to what triggered the euro crisis. Germany points to the profligacy of countries on the periphery of the eurozone, namely the pig countries, while Greece attributes the economic break to a systemic fault within the eurozone. Let's dig a bit deeper and evaluate what these two perspectives seek to convey. If the causes of the euro crisis were indeed local, then we would see a marked increase in the budget deficits of these countries post-2000, when the euro was universally adopted. The latter would mean that these countries had indeed been spending more, and perhaps in an irresponsible manner, to rack up deficit. However, if the causes were systemic, then it would not be the fault of the pig countries. Let me elaborate. In the world of Kash Manzori, who has an excellent blog post on this topic, suppose that the adoption of the euro suddenly made it more attractive for investors in the rest of Europe to buy assets in the periphery. This could have caused large, exuberant capital flow from Europe's core to periphery, much like NAFTA helped to spark a surge in capital flows from the U.S. to Mexico in the early 1990s. In theory, that's a good thing and should help the process of economic convergence. But we know that such capital flow bonanzas, as they are called, are notoriously susceptible to changes in investor attitudes and can come to an abrupt halt. These sudden stops in capital flows typically trigger a financial crisis. Crucially, sudden stops may happen even when a country is following all the right macroeconomic policies. As a result, financial crisis may be largely outside the control of a country that's on the receiving end of a capital flow bonanza.
Yes, so Cash goes on to conclude that after compiling the relevant data, that is, budget deficits and capital assets from 2000 to 2007, it seems that the causes of the European debt crisis were, in fact, systemic. Yes, the pig countries have somewhat contributed to the euro crisis through inefficient domestic policies, but ultimately the crisis was largely out of their control. During the economic recession of 2008, investors suddenly balked at the prospect of heavy investment and made a sudden stop to cash flow into the EU periphery countries. So, due to no fault of their own, the pigs racked up current account deficits, an inevitable result of the cash flow bonanza of the previous 7 years. It is these current account deficits, highest in Spain, Portugal, Ireland, and Greece, that finally catalyzed the European crisis.
Cash flow bonanzas. As P. Diddy says, mo money, mo problems. And problems are what we have today. Recently, leaders in the European Union said that legislation mandating the channeling of funds to Spanish banks to prevent their collapse should be agreed to by the end of this year. However, direct aid to Spain is a controversial issue among the German public, many of whom resent the continuous dependence on the German economy and, in effect, the German people, for bailouts of peripheral EU nations. To regulate the actions of Spanish banks, they will be put under the protection of the European Central Bank, headed by Mario Draghi.
Yes, in a verbalization of the German public's frustration and wariness finance ministers from Germany, Finland, and the Netherlands issued a joint statement last month, which stated that any bank rescues only contribute to future economic problems. That is, they implied that saving the banks of periphery countries will only perpetuate the cycle of irresponsible spending and financial exigency.
The Spanish government, only 2 days ago, was reluctant to profess a need for banking bailouts. In an effort to separate itself from the other periphery countries, two of which, Greece and Ireland, have received bailouts from the EU, Spain is insisting that it is in a position to either take or refuse the EU's offers of help. Prime Minister Mariano Rajoy is deliberating on whether or not to apply for a precautionary credit line from Europe's bailout fund, the European Stability Mechanism. Spanish officials emphasize the lack of urgency in making this decision, saying that Spain may or may not need to take the credit line, depending on the state of the market.
However, any aid by the European Union would be coupled with a memorandum obliging the Spanish government to impose more austerity measures. Protests have already occurred over the existing measures, and the government is wary of imposing more. Mr. Rajoy's top economic advisor, Alvaro Nadal, advocates a cautionary approach to Spain's economic predicament, stating that as Europe's fourth largest economy, it should not be subjected to a demeaning rescue program.
Obviously, a jab to Greece there. But anyway, this has been a lot of economics, a lot of money talk. Let's take a break. Here's a calm song, one of my personal favorites, actually, Daughters by John Mayer. Anyway, since we just gave you guys a pretty economics-laden segment, here are some social issues to remind you, and us too, I suppose, that money is simply a facilitator and that society is fundamentally determined not by deficit, but by the attributes of its people.
Yes. So in Russia, Prime Minister Dmitry Medvedev. Yes.
Okay.
Okay. Voiced support for a ban on public smoking by 2015. He did this both out of a preoccupation over the 400,000 lives per year that smoking claims in Russia, as well as a desire to propel himself into the sphere of political relevance, which has long been dominated by the previous prime minister and current president, Vladimir Putin.
Yes, they seem to switch off all the time, Putin and Medvedev. Anyway, the Russian public doesn't take Medvedev's advocacy of this social cause too seriously. There was already in place a ban on public drinking, which is largely ignored. And with a smoking population of 30%, as well as an abundance of cheap tobacco, the price is about $2 a pack, Medvedev's ambitious proclamation is lacking in serious credibility.
Russian President Vladimir Putin, however, issued a statement yesterday that is still making waves. He denounced the wearing of headscarves in schools, despite his perhaps slightly contradictory affirmation that the Russian state respects all religions.
The issue came to light when a high school principal in Russia's southern region of Stavropol forbade girls from Muslim families to wear headscarves in his school. Putin's support of this ban could lead to tension between the national government and the Muslim-dominated regions of Chechnya and the volatile Northern Caucasus. The Kremlin-backed leader of Chechnya, Ramzan Kadyrov, is notorious for his enforcement of a strict Islamic dress code for women and the use of threats and minor violence to penalize those who do not abide by it.
Russia seems to be following the example of France and Belgium, who have banned the wearing of veils or headscarves in public. The decision has sparked massive debate and outrage when it was announced in the latter two countries, much of which is still going on. But one would expect the same for the Russian decision. But as with most political decisions, only time will tell.
All right. So a few minutes ago, we promised you I Need a Dollar and Houdini came up instead. But now we figured out the technology in this new studio. So we are going to play you I Need a Dollar because everybody needs a dollar sometime in their lives.
Okay. And we're back. Seeing as we have concentrated on Europe this week, I figured we would have to include the UK as we are still members, but potentially for not much longer. So Britain's efforts to create a looser, more detached relationship with the European Union gathered pace this Monday when the government said that it was planned to opt out of more than 130 justice and police measures to which it had once agreed.
Wow, that seems like an interesting move. As Theresa May, the Home Secretary, said in Parliament on Monday, the government's current thinking is that it will opt out and then negotiate to rejoin those measures it deems to be in its national interest.
While I think most people would think this distance away from the EU is rather sudden, it's understandable with the rather ominous backdrop of the economic crisis. Britain's public increased hostility to further European integration, the declaration Monday seemed intended to send a strong political signal and almost appease their critics. However, the implications of such announcement remain unclear.
Well, I think that the UK is too much of a key player in the European Union for them to lose membership completely.
However, I think it is possible for Europe to get annoyed with the British mentality that is always seen as separate from the EU. The attitude could be seen as potentially snobbish and therefore could pose...
Wow, snobbery has really never been associated with Britain.
No,
this is such a new, new concept.
Yeah. But no, but it could polarize other countries as a result. Like, of course, this is only speculation and we'll have to see like what actually happens. But I mean, it seems strange. But what do you think could happen between the UK and EU?
Well, generally, I would say that the UK would never distance themselves from the EU in hopes of leaving in the future. Their actions have not been promising. David Cameron has been hinting that he could hold a referendum on Britain's relations with the EU. And one newspaper reported Sunday that a senior cabinet minister wanted Britain to threaten openly to leave the 27-country bloc.
Yeah, so with these actions, it's understandable why people are fearing that as the EU crisis deepens, that the UK will exit the Union.
In all fairness, Britain has always had an ambivalent relationship with Europe throughout the years. Unlike the other five of the six founding countries of the European Union, Belgium, France, Germany, Italy, Luxembourg, and the Netherlands, Britain was a victor, whereas the others were all captured or defeated during World War II. As a result, the war was widely considered the country's finest hour when it stood against fascism and Nazi Germany.
Yeah. Well, before we get into too much history, we should probably move on, as this is all highly speculative. But in other news, still concerning Britain, an agreement has been reached concerning the Scottish independence vote.
David Cameron and the Scottish First Minister, Alex Salmond, ended months of intense negotiations on Monday, formally agreeing to the terms for a referendum on independence for Scotland that could dismantle the sometimes uneasy and often uneven partnership between their lands since the Act of Union in 1707.
The two men agreed to hold the vote in the fall of 2014. Technically, the agreement simply transferred to the Scottish authorities the power to hold a referendum among Scotland's 5 million people. But its signing was widely seen as a signature moment in the long drive towards independence by Mr. Salmond, who has pressed for the voting to be held in 2014, later than Mr. David Cameron initially wanted.
The referendum will actually be very helpful for the Conservatives, and if passed, there will be sweeping consequences across the political spectrum. For the opposition Labour Party especially, they would have to forfeit the electoral support among Scots if Scotland broke away from Britain.
And now, to put you in a really good mood for this Friday, I'm pretty sure most news nowadays is rather depressing, but we're not really going to play a very happy song anyways, but we'll see.
It's kind of a happy song. It's kind of upbeat, right?
Kind of. Anyways, this is Ready to Start by The Arcade. Yeah. And in other news, in Greece, tens of thousands of protesters joined a second nationwide strike in 3 weeks on Thursday, moving to bring a country to a new near standstill in a bid to show European Union leaders in the meeting in Brussels that they are holding next week that new austerity cuts being demanded by Greece's lenders would cripple society and further depress the economy.
Protest rallies began peacefully but were disrupted when demonstrators broke away from the crowd near the parliament and threw rocks, bottles, and firebombs at the police, who responded with tear gas. A police spokesman said 40,000 people joined rallies in central Athens, while organizers said the figure was around double that. Smaller rallies were held in other cities, including the ports of Salonika and Patra, on northern and western Greece.
It was the latest in a wave of protests that appear to be gaining steam in southern European countries, wary of austerity, particularly Portugal and Spain, where citizens have come out to push against grinding cuts as their economies spiral lower.
Agreeing to catastrophic measures means driving society to despair, said Yanis Panagopoulos, the head of Greece's largest private sector union. The consequences, as well as the protests, will then be indefinite.
It is rather sad, but given the economic downturn and the large likelihood of conditions further worsening, protests seem likely to occur more and more. The strike disrupted transportation throughout the country, with the subway in downtown Athens closed for much of the day and taxi drivers halting services for several hours.
Flights were grounded for 3 hours in the morning after air traffic controllers staged a walkout, joining other civil servants and workers in the private sector, including lawyers, pharmacists, and doctors.
It also seems fitting that as a result, Greek political polarization is also on the rise, with a move towards extreme right-wing parties and ideas. While it remains improbable that anything will dramatically change, it is a bit disconcerting that the rise of such thought is even possible as a result of economic downturn.
Well, I mean, it happened after the Great Depression in Nazi Germany, and that fostered the rise of Hitler. So when people are desperately looking for an alternative, these other more extreme options seem really like the only viable ones.
Mm. Well, especially relevant song to this kind of a news story. Here's Revolution by the Beatles.
We're playing a lot of songs today just because we like music and it's Friday.
It's
and you,
Friday.
You want to listen.
Yeah.
You got to get down on Friday. Heading to Deutschland for our last story. While Germany has been very useful in the bailouts of the PIGS countries, Portugal, Italy, Ireland, Greece, and Spain, as we have mentioned, it now has some additional domestic issues which may take precedence over the international, well, intercontinental economic crisis.
Indeed. So Chancellor Angela Merkel's main challenger, Pierre Steinbrück, accused her on Thursday of driving a wedge between Germany and its European partners through duplicitous handling of the Eurozone crisis. Mr. Steinbrück is viewed as a forceful and gifted speaker and earned a reputation as a man of action from his tenure as Ms. Merkel's first cabinet.
In a rather aggressive address to the lower house of parliament, Mr. Steinbrück asserted that Ms. Merkel had allowed members of her center-right coalition to publicly bully Greece and that she had failed to convince Germans about the benefits of Euro membership.
Clearly, Merkel will be facing some tough opposition, especially when you have Mr. Steinbrück saying, "Rarely has Germany been as isolated as it is today as a result of such policies." Analysts and many Germans viewed the exchange as the harbinger for the topics and the tone that will dominate the campaign in the months before parliamentary elections in the autumn of 2013.
She also stood her ground, and in her speech, Ms. Merkel defended her government's plan for Europe with renewed vigor, calling for solidarity with Greece and repeating her pledge to keep it in the Eurozone. So clearly, the campaign is in full-fledged, and although Steinbrück attempted to gain additional popular support, it has proved unsuccessful.
Ms. Merkel is as popular as ever, and she was given higher marks for her leadership qualities by 77% of those queried by the polling agency Forsa, compared with 53% for Mr. Steinbrück.
So I suppose, hopefully, Merkel is in the clear for another term. And on that unusually positive note, I think we end our radio session for today.
Yeah, so thank you to everyone for listening and continue to listen next week, where we will be doing a special show solely on the upcoming American election. And after that hour, you will be an expert on all things American.
Well, I mean, you would think that you, Sanjana, being my friend, would be an expert on all things American, and you still think that you needed a ping pong paddle to play beer pong.
Well, okay. But anyways... join us again next week, God. And you will get to see Tamar making some more fun of me. That will be fun.
It's my specialty. Anyway, this is fun, and as our final song for you today, hopefully it will make your day. Please tune in again next week, and if you have any questions, concerns, tez@standrews.com, or please post a comment. We have a Facebook group, Outside the Bubble. Join it, listen in. Every week, we're going to be here.